Welcome to Simple Actions, and good evening. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Debbie.
Hey, Debbie.
And again, thank you for accommodating the tables, because the church evidently is feeding the masses tomorrow morning, and we didn't want to have to take them down to put them back up. All right, so good evening, and welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Debbie.
Hey, Debbie. Hey, Debbie.
For those of us who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing the second half of step four. And before I start reading, I want to introduce our panel. We have Catherine and Donald here from the city of Norfolk and Virginia Beach. And they'll introduce themselves and tell you all their demographics about that. So I will read the first paragraph on page, I got to fill in the blank, 67. And then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So we spent 2 weeks on step four. Last week was on resentment. This week is on fear and sex inventory. So we're kind of starting in the middle there. So step four is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And page 67, we're going to start with notice the word. Notice the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we, ourselves, set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. We do have six readings tonight, so the panel will share a few minutes on each reading, and Catherine has volunteered to go first.
Hi, my name is Catherine, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Catherine.
My sobriety date is December 2nd, 2009, and this group, Simple Actions, is my home group, and I do have a sponsor, and I try to work with other women as well to help achieve sobriety. So the second half of step four, you know, when I did step four, it wasn't very neat. It wasn't like, oh, we're doing step four part one and step four part two. It was a long process for me. And it took me a little while to get to completion of step four. So I'm just going to share my experience with fear. And, you know, when it says at the beginning of that paragraph how, notice the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties, they're referring to that inventory, that sample inventory on page 65. And so in my inventory process, that part of my inventory was kind of my reaction to the resentments that I had and the things that that, you know, caused me discomfort. And when I really got down to my reaction to events and things that I had a resentment about, a lot of times it was, my reaction was fear. And so it was really very prevalent in my in my inventory. But now it's asking me in the next paragraph that it wants me to list down and take an inventory of all of my fears, which is kind of a little bit different. And you know, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was really afraid. I was really afraid of this program. I was really afraid that I wouldn't be able to get sober. I was really afraid because I couldn't stop drinking. And I was really afraid because I had caused a lot of collateral damage in my life. I was so afraid to write down what was going on with me in a journal because I was afraid that someone, i.e. the police, might search my house and find it. And I did not want to come and clean with what I had done. And so that's the state that I got here in. I was full of fear. And, you know, I had a major fear hanging over my head for a year and a half because I was facing felony charges. And everyone kept saying, if you stick with it, you focus on the program, all that other stuff will go away. And it was true. It took a year and a half, but those felony charges disappeared. And, you know, through that time, I'm getting sober. But if you had told me that I was going to sit down and talk with you about all my fears, I don't know that I would have been really happy about that idea. And even when it got to this point where I needed to sit down and write my fears, it was really hard for me to clarify that and to put it into words what it is I'm really afraid of. And so the bottom line is that when I'm working through this step up until this point, people have been kind of helping me along the way to realize my alcoholism is a disease that I'm powerless over, and that by taking step three, this is kind of like the progression of that, that this is my willingness, this is my surrender to continue to do these things that are so hard and that I feel like I don't know how to do this. But it felt great to get it done. And I just kind of have a few notes in my book from things that I've written down, that it set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. And that is so true for me because I walk around not aware of the fact that I have fear. And I've heard people use other words for fear like worry, concerns. You know, there's all kinds of other words that you can use to describe what fear is. But I am blind to see how it sets in motion all these things in my life. And I can't see it. And I have fear when I don't know where I'm at, when I don't know what's next and I'm not secure in my relationships. And I'll go ahead and pass over to Donald.
Thanks.
I'll leave you on that positive note.
I was afraid you were going to do that. thank you. And I'm Donald Smith, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the West End Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock at the St. Andrew's Church over on it's on Graydon, but we meet in on Princess Anne Road. This is the second time I've done this step, this part of this step, so I'm not sure what it's telling me. Which y'all, either I need to do more of it, or or you like what I said, I don't know what it was. So the fear inventory is For me, it did two things over the course of, I forgot to tell you, my sobriety date is October 17th, 1994. When I first did the steps out of the book, I did a lot of that, you know, that basic stuff you see in the resentment inventory. I have all these fears, I have these resentments towards people, and I have fear. And if I look at what's underneath all of those resentments, all of them have fear in them. There's not a single one of them that I didn't start because I was afraid of something. And how do I find that out? Is by looking at the third column. If I look at the third column, it tells me, for example, what was affected in my life, my self-esteem. Well, if somebody has done something to me and I'm mad at them about it, you know, it impacts my self-esteem. I don't look at myself right. And really what I'm doing, I'm afraid at the way I look to other people, or I'm afraid about the way I feel because of the way this person has done this and that to me. I mean, it's just all, I mean, wah, 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 you know. And that's all that it is. It's, you know, and when the book says that it is an evil, I mean, this also helped me later in sobriety because, well, I'll get to that later. I just want to point out a couple things. It says here, it is an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of my existence is shot through with it. I mean, does that mean like I'm fearful sometimes and most of the time I'm not? Or does it really mean that my existence, my very being as an alcoholic, is filled with fear? And I think that's what that means. And what was difficult for me at first to get to, and it takes time, you know, these things come up all the time. And for some reason, they come up when I'm 5 years sober, then it comes up when I'm 8 years sober, then it comes up when I'm 11 years sober. It just starts popping back up. Because I haven't gotten to the root of the problem, and it's who I am as a person. It's this important because if you go back to page 62, in that paragraph about selfishness, it talks about the fact that I place myself in a position. I invariably find that at some time in the past I've made decisions based on self, which placed me in a position to be hurt. And this echoes the same thing. It is an evil corroding thread. It sets trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we feel we didn't deserve. So underneath all of this selfishness is a fear, and we're going to read about it in the next couple paragraphs. So I won't tell you what's happening in the movie before we get to the end of it. I just want to say that, you know, I really did have a fundamental experience with who I am as a human being, as an alcoholic, I should say, that really changed my life once I really realized what this paragraph is talking about and how it relates to my resentment inventory, which I thought my resentment inventory is a big one. That's what I got to do. It's got all the columns. It's got this. I got that. That's all bull. No, I'm not supposed to. I'm in the sanctuary, I think.
Watch your language, Tom.
I have to watch what I say. But in reality, I think that those four columns gets me to the real crux of the matter, which is, we'll read it in the next paragraph, called self-reliance. So thank you.
All right, we're going to move to page 68 and read two paragraphs there. It starts with, "Perhaps there's a better way." Perhaps there's a better way, we think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear.
Wow, there's a lot in those two paragraphs that are pretty heavy stuff. Donald touched on that paragraph right before it, where the first paragraph on page 68, where it says, we asked ourselves why we had fear. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? And I have a definition of self-reliance as everything I do or don't do to keep my fear at bay. But the bottom line is I don't have the ability to get rid of my fear or to control it. I didn't have the ability to control my drinking or get rid of my alcoholism. And so that first paragraph we read is telling me that the only way to get rid of my fear is to trust and rely upon God. And it does echo a lot of what we read in step three, that, you know, God is my creator, he's my director, he's my employer. And some days I would like to be able to quit my job on paper and go get a job with God. But that promise that he will enable us to match calamity with serenity, that is pretty strong. I mean, I can tell you I want that. That's something that I want. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I saw the things that people had that I wanted, it was calmness, serenity, peacefulness. They had hope that life was good or that there were things yet to be revealed. And I didn't have any of that hope. And that this living this way is actually the way of strength. And I've experienced that on different occasions where a situation arises that normally would be full of calamity for me, and for whatever reason, I know it's not me. Like, my true self doesn't react this way, but I see myself reacting in a different way. And it's like, how did that just happen? Like, I don't know how to explain it. And it's nice. I will say that a lot of times when I do have fear or resentment, I'll come back and read these pages, and it really helps me. You know, and when I say I have fear, like, not to, like, get into specifics, but you know, there are persistent fears that, you know, they go away and then they come back, and they go away and they come back, and they nag at me. And one, you know, if I come and read these pages and I see there's a prayer here, I'm to ask God, I'm to pray and ask him to remove my fear and direct his attention to what he would have me be. And the deal is that in addition to, you know, the resentment of my inventory, my resentment inventory and my fear inventory.
I like that.
and my sex inventory, I was actually directed to take a few more inventories, and one of them was on my old ideas. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, those are things that as I'm walking in this process, on this journey of this recovery path, that I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't know I had this old idea. And it's an old idea that I've had forever. So when it says, when it gives me instruction to pray and ask God to remove my fear and direct my attention to what he would have me be, my old ideas say, I know what I'm supposed to be. I know what that looks like. And so this is, this takes a lot of practice, and so doing the inventory on my old ideas, and as I continue to take inventory as things come up, I find old ideas that I wasn't even aware I had. Things that I think I have to have in my life to be okay. That I can't be okay without certain things. And it's not even specifically material things. It's not even money or a secure job or... I came in here with a lot of old ideas about material things and that was the source of my happiness. But simple, like weird things, like that I'm not okay if I don't have a besties relationship with all of my sisters. I mean, that's just an old idea that has no reflection on whether I'm okay or not. So focusing on what God would have me be, that's a new idea for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. I'm always amazed that we're doing an inventory and we don't talk about the inventory and the fears in this little handout that I have. So I'll just do it. I'm going to do it real quickly. It does. What it tells me to do is I review. And when I learned to do this, I learned to turn plural pronouns into singular nouns. So when it says we, I just say I. So I review my fears thoroughly. I put them on paper, even though I had no resentment in connection with them. I ask myself why I had them. That's one question. Then I ask myself, wasn't it because self-reliance failed me? Self-reliance was as good as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us had great self-confidence, but it didn't really solve the fear problem or any other. It made me cocky or worse. And, you know, when I'm doing self-reliance, what am I doing? I'm overcompensating. I'm pushing back because I feel so insecure inside. Insecure is not the right word. I would call it insecure. It would look like insecurity. It would look like self-esteem. It would look like self-pity. But it was none of those things, because beneath all of that stuff is the fabric of my existence is shot through with fear. It's the foundation upon which I built this entire life of mine, trying to grab for whatever I wanted, when I wanted to do what I want to do, when I want to do it, all this stuff. Because I didn't want you to know who I was. I was afraid to know who I was. And so I'm just filled with it. But I don't realize it because it's so far back in my mind. I pushed it back so far that I can't get to it. So I'm thinking that it's self-esteem or it's a depression, or it's whatever it is. It's got to be something other than being an alcoholic, you know? Alcoholism, that's what it is. I mean, it's about that simple, but it's not. It's hard for me. I don't want to have to admit that. I would rather be completely bonkers, you know? Make me a paranoid schizophrenic, right? But only on a small level, you know, not a big one, you know? I want some craziness other than just simple alcoholism, because that's too easy. But that's the truth. That's who I am. I'm an alcoholic. So, you know, I get cocky, you know. I mean, I went through my whole life. You know, I would be drinking, looking at these people in these bars, and they were getting sloppy drunk, and I'm looking, and I'm just pounding alcohol. I'm looking at them thinking, what's wrong with this moron? What's the matter with you, buddy? Can't you hold your drinks? You know, I mean, but that attitude is what I carry with me. And, you know, I don't know anything, right? In my entire life, all I've done is drink. So to me, that's, I want to live my life. I got all these things I want to do, but my crowning achievement every night is drinking everybody else under the table, right? Because that's all I know how to do. That's really all, and that's all I really care about. And why is it? Because when I wake up in the morning and look at who I am, I know, hey, I'm not, where am I going? So I don't want to ask myself that question, because then I'm really afraid, because I know where I'm going. So anyway, the inventory is really important. I'll say one other quick thing about that. You know, there's a line in the 12 and 12 that talks about my defects of character are activated by fear. Fear of not getting what I want, or fear of losing something that I have. I hear that all the time. And when I first got sober, I believed it. And it sounds good. And in a lot of cases, that is absolutely the case. But what happens when I have everything I want and I still have fear? What happens when that happens? It tells me that there's more to it than just those two things. And most of the time, it's because I'm running on self-reliance. And I'm doing it in a very subtle way that I'm not aware of. Okay? So, but I have to find out what those things are. I can't, you know, I can tell you all day long what I found. My sponsor told me once, he says, I called him on the phone. I said, I have all this anxiety. He goes, what? He said, don't laugh. He was laughing. He was laughing too. He laughed at me on the phone. I'm like, oh, I'm freaking out. He says, well, what is that, Donald? It's anxiety. What do you mean? What is it? I said a couple other things, but I'm in church. And so he says, Donald, you have a $10 word for a four-letter problem. And I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. I mean, it went right over my head. I don't know what the hell he's talking about. And he says, well, I tell you what, you think about it and call me back tomorrow. Click. You know, I was mad at him for about 5 minutes. Then I go out to work. I got a nice car. I got a good job. I got a nice house. I got a nice car. Things are going okay. And I'm filled with all this anxiety. I'm afraid. What is that? You know, it's what I've got the job. I've got the house. I've got this. It's all self-reliance. It's all that it is. And it's not just all that it is, because it's way deeper than that. You got to really get down in there and find it. So I encourage you to do it, because when I found it, it really changed my life completely. I literally, in the middle of February, found it out. I was standing outside. It was 10 degrees outside. I talked to my sponsor for 2 hours outside the church. The meeting was over. It was so wonderful. I didn't even feel it. I know, I'm talking too long. And I'll just say this. Let's see. You know, I was going to say this last time I did this and forgot to say it. You know, this doesn't guarantee me that I don't have fear in my life. I'm always going to have it. It's always going to show up. It's the nature of being alive. You know, you're always going to have it. But the problem is that, you know, I always thought that having courage meant I didn't have any fear. But in reality, having courage means I do what I'm supposed to be doing in spite of the fear. If I've done something wrong, I have to admit it regardless of the consequences. That's just the reality. That's just the way it is. I have to tell the truth. I can't go through my life not telling the truth. I mean, it says in the book, rigorous honesty is really important. Now, I had to do that with some discernment. I can't tell the truth and hurt your feelings at the same time, but I still have to tell you the truth. Even if it is going to hurt your feelings, I can't be afraid of those things. If I go through my life like that, I'm not in the right space, thinking that I'm justifying not telling the truth. So you got to have courage, and you have courage because God takes care of the results. I'm supposed to, you know, I hear all the time people say, I'm trying to do the next right thing. Well, I was taught to do the next thing right. I know what the next right thing is. I know how to open up the lid of this coffee cup and get a sip of coffee. And so it's all a practical thing. And so I try to focus on there because I'm not real good at moralizing. Every time I thought I knew something was right, it ended up being wrong. And when I thought it was wrong, it ended up being right. So one other quick thing, and that is I had to go to a meeting once. My first... I managed condominium associations, and I had to go to this condo meeting, and the board was just livid. They were angry and mad, and I was cussing out me and the board president would cuss at each other over the phone. It was going to be a horrible meeting I was going to go to. It was horrible. So I get in my car, and I go to this meeting. I had just gotten the sponsor, and I got to the meeting, and I'm just filled with fear. And he said, so I called him on the phone. I said, you know, I don't know what to do. He goes, well, you got a big book with you? I said, well, yeah. And he says, well, you know, go to the fear prayer and read it. I said, I don't know what the hell a fear prayer is. So he directed me to this page, and I read this, and I changed the we to me. I said, I ask God to remove my fear and direct my attention to what he would have me be. Not what I want, but what I can be. Be is an open-ended word. I can be. I'm an old hippie. I like that kind of stuff. The be is. You know, just live there and let it happen. You know, and there's a line this says a couple things. One of them, this is doing my sixth and seventh step. If I'm asking God to remove something, am I not doing my seventh step? Asking God to remove my defects of character. Fear is a defect of character. I'm freaking out. And then he says, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. step 11. And I said, well, how long is the pause? First of all, agitated and doubtful, right? I'm pissed off, right? Agitated, I'm doubtful, I have fear. So then I said, well, how long do I pause? He goes, maybe 2 hours. Maybe you should shut up and let the meeting happen the way it's supposed to and stay the hell out of it. And I thought, what a novel idea. You know? And so I go to this and I do this, and holy cow, it just went. I mean, I didn't do anything, and the meeting worked out exactly correctly, and everything was great. And they were walking out the door thanking me for stuff they had cussed me out about 2 days before. And I'm thinking, wow. I mean, it worked right in front of my face. And I think that's what was so wonderful. It was, you know, the practicality of Alcoholics Anonymous blows my mind. And it happens in real time, right in front of me. All I have to do is sit there and watch it happen. You know, so anyway, that's all we got, thank you.
All right, we're going to continue at the bottom of page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
So this kind of starts a section where we start talking about taking our sex inventory. And you know, really this inventory isn't much different than our first inventory, except now I'm not listing my resentments, but I'm actually looking at how I've treated other people in my life. And the truth is that it was very clear to me, and I guess it kind of softened this inventory for me a little bit, because when I took my inventory on my resentments, you know, and all the things that I was upset that other people had done to me, and really got down to that fourth column where I started looking at my reaction to it, and I saw that I was afraid that, I mean, in almost every single situation, I was self-seeking. I really was not concerned about the other individual's wants or needs at all. And I consistently wanted people to be something they were not. I wanted them to behave differently than they did. Just like, you know, I, an alcoholic in his cups, I couldn't behave any differently no matter how hard I tried. And, you know, and it talks about in the bedevilments how we couldn't form personal relationships. I'm miserable. All these problems going on in my life. And the fact is that I lacked, because of my plenitude of fears and because of all the forms that my self-obsession takes, I am completely unable to form any kind of relationship with any other individual based on truly valuing them as a human being, as one of God's kids that deserves respect. I'm completely incapable. And if you had asked me, I mean, in fact, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, the first month I did go away for 30 days because I had a really, really, really hard time putting down the alcohol. It was probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to do, besides going through these steps. But when I came in, if you had told me, I guess in like the first 30 days, I went to a boatload of meetings. I mean, I was going to 3 or 4 meetings a day. And I remember hearing the alcohol was just a symptom. And I'm like, these people are crazy. Like, it didn't even make sense to me. I couldn't conceive what that meant. And truly what that means is that the alcoholism was a symptom. My bigger problem is me and my selfishness, the fact that my whole life is run on fear. And it prevents me from forming any kind of relationship with another person. So for me, in this case, this was really looking at how I treated other people. And the truth was is that I didn't treat anybody nicely. I didn't treat anybody with the respect, just the basic respect that a human being deserves. Yet I demanded that from everyone around me. I mean, not wanted it, I demanded it. And so if you didn't treat me right, then I was pissed. And you know, the other thing that I really do, and we talk about it in further on in the next couple of paragraphs, but you know, it talks about we do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. So you know, I guess what I was saying about how alcohol was just a symptom, for me, I really thought my problem was the drinking, and I really thought that I was a nice person. I believe that. I could have passed up a lie detector test because I believed it to my core. But putting these things on paper, it's not so much that I'm a bad person. It's just that I was incapable of acting any other way. And so this isn't about judging myself or others. It's really about trying to get to the true nature of how I conduct myself with other people. Thank you.
Thank you. I was excited when I got to this paragraph.
Of course you are, Donald.
It says, now about sex. I said, oh, right. Something I know about. Because, I mean, you know, one of the things, my very first inventory, I had to do an inventory, and we were discussing principles. And they wanted me, you know, could you do some inventory on principles? And I said, well, I want to do one on marriage. He said, that's not a principle, you idiot. That's an institution. Oh, says I. That's right. He said, so he said, well, what do you want to talk about? And I said, whatever. I said, he goes, I think you should do one on monogamy. And I thought, well, I have a resentment about monogamy. Isn't that interesting? And my life up to that point was exactly about that. I had no interest whatsoever in having a committed relationship with anybody. I mean, and I thought, see, this is the thing. I think all these things when I'm drinking, and I carry all this crap with me when I get sober. And I believe all these lies about myself, when in truth, that's not me at all. That is not me at all. But it took a long time to get through all that because I have an image I have in my head. Not that I'm giving you, not that I want you to have, but one that I believe. The lies I tell myself. So, but I will say this. I am not, I really do believe in pepper and salt and garlic salt and, you know, chocolate and all kinds of stuff. So, you know,
you're crazy.
I'm not that straight. I'm not the straight pepper diet, but I'm definitely not no man for his flavor, no whatever that is. I can't even say it at this time. All right then.
Oh,
should I stop now or? But I do not bewail the institution of marriage, and I don't think my troubles are traceable to sex causes whatsoever. I think my troubles are traceable back to me and who I am as a human being, as an alcoholic. I keep saying human being, I mean alcoholic. You know, I'm different than 90% of the people, and why is it? Because 10% of the population is alcoholism, and that's just a medical fact, and we are all those people. So, you know, I really did like the idea that I'm not the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct, including myself. I'm not the judge, I'm not the jury, I'm not anything other than who I am. And so the question is, what have I done with this God-given thing that has caused problems? That's really what this is about for me. And not only cause me problems, but the people around me problems. And so the first time I did this, I went back through all the, you know, all the various girlfriends, you know, thinking, of course, I could go and make amends to them.
Excuse me.
Of course, that didn't happen. Although I will say that I had a woman make her amends to me, and she 13th stepped me into Alcoholics Anonymous after that amends. So I'm not one to say that you should not have relationships with people within the first year, because I had one within 1 month. I was in the bosom of AA. Woo-hoo! That's right. So, in any event, we'll get to the conduct part in a minute. But all this stuff we're going to talk about, we talk about it now or later.
Later.
All this stuff. What I've done is put aside my attitudes about sex and talk about what my attitude towards other human beings are and myself. And that's what I get to when I start doing the review of my conduct. Thank you.
All right, we're going to continue on page 69. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed.
So when it's... talks about reviewing our conduct. This again is really about how I treated other people. And to be honest with you, my life for the most part up to AA, I have been, and even in AA, I mean, come on, I'll be truthful with you. We're here to tell the truth. Is selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate. And it's looking at who have I hurt. All of my actions, they're either selfish or they're not. And the truth is that most of my actions are selfish. And I don't have the power to change that. So like I talked about before, when we saw the fear prayer, we also have a couple of prayers that are here when it talks about reviewing our sex conduct. And one of them is we ask God to mold our ideals and help us live up to them. So, I mean, I don't have a desire in me to treat people badly. That doesn't mean that I don't. But my ideal is to treat people with respect and as, you know, human beings, as God's kids, just like the respect that I want from other people. So I have to ask God to help me live up to that, because I don't know how to do that on my own. Because as we've just been talking about, I'm so riddled with fear and selfishness. The other thing that I wanted to bring up about this is that, you know, and it talks about all these different inventories. You know, when I came into AA and I was, you know, sitting in the back of the room reading all the steps on the wall, I had no idea that we would get this, I don't want to say intense, but just start looking at all these things. And you know, I've been asked to take inventories on different aspects of my life, as I mentioned earlier. And one of the biggest things for me is that my whole life, I mean, it started growing up in an alcoholic home. I learned how to live different lives. You know, the life that you live on the outside, the life that you live on the inside. And I mean, by the time I'm an early teenager, I've got a gazillion different lives going on. I mean, it just depended where I was. And I mean, you get to a point in your life, and I mean, for me, it kind of all ended with, I mean, I was such a bad drunk, I couldn't even function, you know, in the world. I couldn't function in the world anymore. I couldn't go on. And all of this stuff that we're talking about and doing here, it helped me to kind of get rid of all those separate lives and kind of get, like Donald was saying, start really getting down to the core of who I am. And I'll be honest with you, I remember when I came into AA, I was thinking, I don't even know who I am. I don't even know if I like that person. Because I didn't know. I mean, what if I don't like that person? I mean, what if she's boring, you know? Because I, you know, I've always been kind of a bubbly, kind of outspoken person. And, you know, by the end of my drinking, I couldn't do anything. I was just so, how do I explain it? I didn't know what my interests were because I hadn't had interests outside of drinking and doing the things that helped me drink, i.e. working, bringing home a paycheck. I was just so lost. So here I am asking God to help mold my ideals and help me live up to them. And remembering again and again, just like when I came in and I read the doctor's opinion and I realized that all that stuff that I had done, it wasn't because I was a bad person, it was because I was sick and I was powerless to operate any other way. I'm just glad that I got here and was given a second chance at life. And here it's telling me that my sex powers are God-given and they're good. It's not a bad thing. So now, like we talk about with the fear and asking God to direct my attention to what he would have me be, I'm asking God to help me live up to the ideals. Thank you.
Thank you. These are pretty awesome questions to ask yourself, really. Where have I been selfish? I mean, you know, I don't know any alcoholic that doesn't stop right there and go, what the hell? Selfish? Do I have to keep on going? I mean, it's all been selfish, right? All of it. Even when I think I'm not being selfish, I really am. Because I've got some underlining reason why I'm doing what I'm doing, why I want what I want. Where was I dishonest? That was so easy to do. I mean, you know, the first time I did this, it was just, I mean, you know, it was just lied all the time. Inconsiderate. Why is that something that's even in this? That's what I want to know, right? First time I read the inconsiderate, what does that mean? Well, I know what it means now. But back then, I didn't want to have to answer that question because I didn't think it was really relevant. I mean, yeah, inconsiderate. Oh, come on. Tell her to get a life. Come on. If she doesn't like it, she can know where the door is. Come on. But, and they did. They all knew where the door was. I ended up living a little efficiency apartment all by myself. They weren't as dumb as I thought they were. No, I should say as I hoped they were.
Poor Donald.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I set that train and I sent the ball in motion myself. I mean, I'm the person that did this. There's no poor Donald. You know, and it says, where did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness? Well, I mean, what does that mean, unjustifiably? I mean, come on. But when I do this and I look at what I've done, you know, and I always wanted to put it back on them, and it was never them, it was always me. You know, I never really wanted to look at my side of the street and what I had been and why I did it. I mean, that's just the way it was. And so I did this. I put it down on paper and I looked at it, and it wasn't very pretty. It wasn't very nice. And it was here, I think, that I really lost the illusion that I was basically an okay guy. Because you know, I go through my life, not so much anymore to this now, but I used to go through my life thinking, you know, I just ignored. There's a great line in the book. It says, it's talking about God, a problem neatly evaded or entirely ignored. Remember that line? It's in the We Agnostics. Well, if I'm God, I am a problem neatly evaded or entirely ignored when I'm drinking. I don't look at my life. I evade my responsibilities, and I ignore who I am as a person. So this is me finding out who that person is. And then, you know, I tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for my future sex life. I would say, and subjected each relation to this test, was it selfish or not? I got some satisfaction when it says each relation. It meant there were more than one coming, right? I'm sorry, pepper diet. But having said that, this is really about what do I bring to relationships? And I was taught that these questions are not just about my personal relationships with another, with my intimate relationships, but also with relationships at work. It could be somebody at work. I mean, how often have I done exactly all these things at work to people that I worked around my life with? So this is a really good inventory to look at when you're having trouble at work. You know, you get in the car. How many people got in the car today and bitched about what was going on at work and that person? Now you're all lying.
I know.
I got to sit in meetings all the time listening to people talk about how horrible work is. Come on. So in any event, this is what I do when I lean to look at this, you know, and my relationship to other people. And the same sex idea is, what do I bring to a relationship? My job today is to bring something to each of my relationships. My relationship to God, my relationship to my significant other, my relationship to people at work. What can I do to bring something new to that? And it has to all be based on whether it's selfish, unselfish or not. I have to remember that I'm not, being selfish is no longer in the cards. I have to do something different. So I have to remember that I have to be cognizant of other people and what their needs are and what I can do to help them. And I'm going to tell you that my life is 10 times better when I do that. It's 10 times better. And it is I can't tell you how much wonderful that doing this has. I've evolved into this person that I never really thought I was going to be. I thought I was condemned to do these things that I've always done and act like I liked them when in fact I really didn't. And I could see where it was going. And now, see, a lot of you folks got here early, so you could see where it was going and stopped. I got there. I went all the way down as far as I could get without killing myself or sleeping on the park bench. And I think that's it.
All right, so we're running short on time. I'm going to read a couple of, like, three paragraphs from 69 and 70 and give you all a couple of minutes to share on that. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache.
Okay, so in summary, it's giving us a lot of prayers here. And again, it talks about whatever our ideal turns out to be. And I definitely... worked, my second sponsor and I worked a lot on this because just some situations that came up for me fairly early in my sobriety, within the first year, and my ideal actually was very different from what I thought it was. And so willing to grow toward that was not easy for me. It wasn't like I could just say, okay, this is how I'm going to be, and this is how it is. So I decide what my moral is, and then I ask God to help me be that person, to mold me that way. And again, and on the next page, on page 70, it talks again about we earnestly ask we pray for the right ideal for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity. God, I thought we were done with that in the second step. And for the strength to do the right thing. So the bottom line is, do I have willingness to change here? Do I have willingness to go to God for that change? Because only God can remove the self-will and, you know, help me become the person that I'm meant to be and develop sound character, because I didn't have any of that coming in here. And to be honest with you, I don't really know what sound character looks like. So anyways, thank you for letting me share tonight.
I have a minute.
You have a minute.
I can't add anything to what you just said.
I'm sure you can.
It's no, I mean, it is. Thank you very much. It is really, it's important to remember, I think, for me, that Alcoholics Anonymous, the program, is about inventory and prayer. I mean, that's what it is, and that's what it has been for me for years and years and years. And then when I'll do all that stuff, I can go out and help other people and actually be of service to people rather than run around acting like I know what I'm talking about and not knowing what the is going on. Oops, I almost said it, didn't I? What the heck is going on? And it says here that we ask God for, let's see, where is it? Anyway, I ask God for the power to move towards that sex ideal, that ideal person who I'm supposed to be. Here it is. I ask in meditation, never mind. I can't find it now. Any events. Whatever turns out to be, I'm willing to grow towards it. I must be willing to make amends if harms are done, provided that we do not bring still more harm in doing so. In other words, I treat sex as any other problem. What I'm trying to say is that if you read step 11, it says, I ask God for the power to carry out these things. And I want to remind everybody that I don't have the power to do any of this stuff by myself. And so one of the things I really like about Alcoholics Anonymous is I'm asking God for power. I'm asking, because I can't do it. And all this stuff is wonderful and great, and I can put it all down on paper and go, oh yeah, I'm there, and then walk out the door and be completely a complete jerk, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I try through my life to try to implement the things that I've learned how to do in AA, and the one thing I learn to do rigorously every morning is get up and ask God for the power to do His will, because I don't have the power to do it. And I love this stuff. I just love doing inventory, but if I can't, if I don't have, you know, I got to remember that just because I've done it, I've written it down, doesn't mean that it's going to happen. So, you know, a lot of people walk through life, you know, upset. They get, you know, they beat themselves up, you know, like those Iranians with the thing, they beat self-flagellation things. You know, I'm sorry. The thing is for me is that I got to remember that I am a child of God, and that my thing is this, and it's not in the book, but I like to think that if you consider me in the context of my limitations, I'm perfect. It doesn't mean that I can't get any better. It means that God made me who I am, and my job is to move towards a better Donald, and in doing so, be of service to you. Because clearly, even when I was the worst I was causing trouble for you guys. You know, people in your lives. Just getting better is service for them. To say nothing of being there to answer the phone and help work with other people and be polite to people. So, there's more I'd like to say, but I can't, so I'm done. Thank you.
I'd like to thank Catherine and Donald. Thank you. Seven tradition basket. And let me read this green card here. Okay, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup and central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Is there any AA-related announcements tonight? Or are there any? Lovely. Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands.
This is about member
Bridget. All right, and here's the important question. Is there any newcomers here today? You are the reason we're having the meetings. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce themselves with their first name?
My name is Mike. I'm new to AA. This is my first AA meeting.
Awesome, Mike. Glad you're here.
I'm sure some people will be talking to you after the meeting. We have literature also up here. Anything you can fold is free. The books are for sale for a nominal price, and you can see me afterwards if you'd like to get a book. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, Jill and Jason are going to be up here to answer any questions you might have about sponsorship after the meeting. Please feel free to talk to them. Closing. All right, we're going to thank the panel again for sharing. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at the International House of Pancakes on 21st and Granby. Who would like to read the last two paragraphs of page 164 to close the meeting?
Don't everybody jump at once.
I'll do it.
Charlotte, thank you.
Judy.
Last two paragraphs?
Mm-hmm.
I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Charla.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
And we close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
All right, thank you.